I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, four are dead, including three children, in another case of lawlessness on our roadways. Plus, a local police chief calls the rise in juvenile crimes simply alarming. And President Joe Biden is pushing for more EVs on our roadways. But what happens if Americans don't want to buy them? That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A heavy topic to start the show with today. And honestly, I kind of feel bad. I was joking the other day about my speeding ticket where I was driving too freaking fast on the interstate. I just was. And I deserved the speeding ticket. And I joked about it because I was like, you know, I'm pro-law enforcement. Why am I getting a speeding ticket? It's because they're trying to keep people safe. And when I saw this story out of Renton, I felt like an idiot for laughing and joking about speeding on the interstate. So that's where I'm at today. So I don't know if you guys have seen this yet, but there was a crash in Renton. Four people are dead, including three children. Apparently, this was sort of part of a homeschooling group, which is just devastating. And the woman who was killed also had two kids in the car, and they were critically injured. They're still alive. But the three other kids who were killed were not her children, but part of a homeschool group. So just what we know right now, I mean, the big thing that we're going to talk about is it seems like the 18-year-old who crashed into them seems like that's the causing driver, and he was driving way too fast. Now, we're waiting to see if there's any more information about what led up to the crash or about the suspect. He's under basically lock and key at Harborview because he was injured as well. So the victims, 38-year-old Andrea Smith Hudson, 13-year-old Matilda Wilcoxon, 12-year-old Eloise Wilcoxon, and 12-year-old Boyd Brown killed in the crash. It was at, if you're familiar with Renton, 192nd and 140th Avenue. You know, there's a whole bunch of just devastating elements to this story, but the 18-year-old male who is believed to have caused the crash, he was at Harborview Medical Center as of Wednesday evening. Obviously, you know, they have him under supervision because if, you know, he was deemed to be driving recklessly or something and it wasn't truly an accident, or if he was speeding, then he's going to be looking at four counts of vehicular homicide and multiple counts of vehicular assault. So criminal charges are pending. So we'll let you know when we hear more on that. But again, I look at that 18-year-old suspect, and we have encouraged a lawless environment on our roadways. I don't know if there's going to be any other elements to this. You know, obviously the first thing that comes to my mind is, was the vehicle stolen? Was he high or drunk? I mean, we just had a state trooper who was killed by a driver, an illegal immigrant who was high and drunk. And so we won't know that until we hear from prosecutors and get more details on the case. But it is not a surprise, I guess, when we have lawlessness on the roads from juveniles. And I do consider an 18-year-old still a juvenile. You know, it's a teenager. We have seen so many instances of stolen vehicles, of high-speed chases involving juvenile offenders, and of this feeling from juveniles that there simply are not consequences for their actions, because we've shown them as a society that there aren't consequences from their action. I mean, the last almost 10 years now, we have made sure that kids in school have fewer standards that they have to live up to, both academic standards and behavioral standards. What do you think that teaches kids in grade school? Well, elementary all the way through high school, when there are excuses made for them for their grades, when there are excuses made for them for their behavior, when every adult around them is looking the other way, and then they go into adulthood, and you really think that that's not going to carry over, that their behavior is not going to carry over from what we're teaching them at every level, and God forbid they don't have a good parent at home. God forbid that not only are they getting coddled at school, but they're getting coddled at home, or worse yet, they're just being completely ignored at home. They don't have a good parental figure or adult figure teaching them responsibility. They certainly don't have a criminal justice system teaching them responsibility for their actions. It really is truly no surprise that we have a crisis on our hands of juvenile crime, dangerous juvenile crime. And you've got four people dead as a result of lawlessness from an 18-year-old. So we're waiting for more information and whether there's any other layers to that case. But just horrifying. There is a GoFundMe, by the way. Maybe we could post a link to this in the live chat. There's a bunch of GoFundMes. So there's GoFundMes for the three children who were killed, and then for Andrea Hudson, and her, you know, she obviously was killed, but her two children who were critically injured, Nolan and Charlotte, there's a GoFundMe for them. It's raised $128,000 so far. Nicole, I don't know if you heard this. I hadn't seen this, that, you know, the father, Andrea Hudson's husband, at one point was told that one of their children had died in the crash. And I don't know if there was a confusion or a mix-up, but you can imagine the emotional roller coaster that he went on thinking, you know, he'd lost a wife and a child, and then learning that his child was alive in critical care. But then, of course, you're devastated because someone else, that means someone else's child had died.
Right. No, I'm not sure if they thought that she was already gone, because they are still fighting for their lives, is what I'm told. And I think her brother, I think he actually has quite a few broken bones. Yeah. So there's a lot of trauma that's happened to these kids.
It's just awful.
Post a picture with the dad and Charlotte this morning that he was smiling, because I think he got some kind of reaction from her. So that's good.
Yeah, some good news. And you also feel for the law enforcement and first responders who come on a scene like that. Man, I can't imagine just seeing dead children, injured children. And then I always think about stuff like that when I see people vilifying the police. I'm like, you don't even freaking know. You don't understand what they have to deal with day in and day out. Are they perfect? No. But they have to deal with things that most people in society would never, ever put themselves in a position to see or to handle. And that's why that's one of the many, many reasons why the anti-police crowd infuriates me. It's like, you do what they do on a daily basis, and you see if you can reach the level of perfection that you're expecting of them.
The van just was mangled, and I mean, it's just heartbreaking. And then the car of the person, the 18-year-old, was not as mangled, and it's always the case.
DUI drivers, always the case. They're the ones who walk away relatively unscathed. I think there's something medically I've heard about that.
Well, you don't go into, if you're drinking.
Yeah, and we don't know that this guy was drinking.
You're typically not as tense when you hit.
I've heard that.
You see it coming, and then you tense up, and then you get more injured. But if you're the one that's under the influence and don't see it coming, it's usually less impactful.
Severe. Gosh, it's just insane.
It's crazy.
And then the Renton police chief, it wasn't technically related, but I think it is related in the grand scheme of things. The Renton police chief becomes just the latest law enforcement official to come out and say what we all see with our own eyes, which is we have a crisis happening right now of juvenile crime. So he had, this was part of a press release about three 15-year-olds who were arrested after they crashed a stolen car they were driving and fled the scene. And then, when officers caught up to them, a few blocks away on foot, one of them dropped a loaded gun that they were carrying while they were trying to escape. 15-year-olds. This isn't normal. This isn't, we can't accept this as some like, and of course they'll call it, why is it gun crime? Like, what? We need to get more guns off the street. 15-year-olds already aren't allowed to carry firearms, so that's already against the law. He went on to say, this incident is the latest in an alarming rise of juvenile-related crimes. Quote, there's no other way to put it, but we are seeing more and more juveniles involved in violent and property crimes. In some cases, rates are doubling and tripling year over year. That's from Renton Police Chief John Schult. And then they went on to talk about statistics. They said from 2022 to 2023, Renton experienced a 40% increase in juvenile assaults. The number more than doubles when a firearm is involved. And then looking at armed robberies by juveniles, there were 13 in 2022 and 21 in 2023. They said when you carve out armed robberies at gas stations, there were 2 in 2022 from juveniles and 20 in 2023. That's a 900% increase just in one city in our state involving a very specific type of crime, armed robberies at gas stations. Armed robberies at gas stations committed by juveniles. 900% increase. The kids are not all right. They said juvenile-related property crime even worse, with a 342% increase in stolen vehicles. Shock of the century when, you know, our lawmakers and all their infinite wisdom in Olympia, the majority party says, oh yeah, we can't chase people who are in stolen cars. Well, what happened, by the way, if police wouldn't have tried to pull over these three juveniles in a stolen car? They had a loaded gun on them. What do you think three 15-year-olds with a loaded gun were heading to do? Were they just on a joyride? If you ask the Democrats in Olympia, they were probably just on a joyride, and it's just a property crime. Like, don't chase people who are just in a stolen vehicle. No, there's no good that can come of three 15-year-old criminals who have a loaded gun. You're going to have to assume the worst on that one, that they were probably going to try to use it on someone. Just insane. And again, all this in the city of Renton, the chief goes on to say, as a society, we must figure out how to curb this trend. Our young people need help and guidance, and they need to be held accountable for their actions. They realize there aren't any meaningful consequences, and there is no deterrent. This is common sense. When you have people, especially juveniles, who, yes, their minds are not fully formed. I'm in full belief of that, that when you're a juvenile, you're spontaneous. I mean, think of the things that we did when we were kids. I did dumb stuff when I was a kid. You know, I would like to say I was a pretty good student too. I mean, I was an A student. I was involved in extracurriculars. That doesn't mean I still didn't do dumb stuff and dangerous stuff. So now you think about a child who doesn't have good grades, who doesn't have good parental supervision or a good adult role model, who doesn't feel like or has been taught by our system that the whole system is designed to keep them down. Everyone in their life, especially young people of color, what are they taught in Washington State? Everyone from their teachers to their coaches to the politicians who speak out to athletes, they're teaching them that the whole system is racist against you. The whole system is designed to keep you down. And no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, it's going to be like that, white supremacy, whatever it is. And then we wonder why they feel like they need to cheat to get ahead, or why they feel like they need to break the law and break the rules to get ahead, because you've taught them that they have to. That's what you've taught them. You haven't encouraged them and said, you can do it. The color of your skin doesn't matter. Your circumstances don't matter. What family you were born into doesn't matter. If you set your mind to it, you can do it. We haven't taught them that. We haven't taught them meritocracy and working hard can get them somewhere in life. They're responsible for this. The adults who have pushed that on the kids in our state are responsible for this. And then the politicians who put that and then undercut our criminal justice system are especially responsible for it. The chief is right. They don't believe there are meaningful consequences to their actions because they've never experienced meaningful consequences to their action in their entire life to date. And people die as a result. So like, if you don't want to, and this is what I get, sorry, I'm gonna go on a rant about this quick. This is what I don't get with the Democrats' approach to youth criminal justice, right? They want to give them like slap on the wrist. Like, hey, we can't treat them like hardened criminals. You know, we need to coddle them and find diversionary options and, you know, throw them in these juvie centers that are, we call schools, where there's no real rules or supervision. And even when there are violent things that happen, the governor just sweeps it under the rug and no big deal. Like, these are just kids. That, if your goal is to make sure that those kids have an opportunity to go down a different path in life, which should be the goal of everyone, right? That they don't wind up in a hardened prison with adults, which should be the goal of everyone, right? The way you're going about it is the exact opposite way to achieve that. Because what you're doing is you're teaching them young that they can get away with doing things, that they're just going to get a slap on the wrist, that they're going to get special treatment. No, what we need to do is the first time a kid acts up, first time the kid acts outside the law, you throw the freaking book at them. I'm not saying throw them in Walla Walla, but I am saying that you need to make it damn clear at the onset that that if you continue this behavior, your life is over. Your life is over, and there are consequences for the things that you do. So coddling them now is going to drive them into a system where they're not going to be able to be coddled, because they're going to be in a hardened prison with hardened criminals, and you're responsible for putting them there because your efforts to change their behavior just taught them that they can get away with what they're doing. It's totally backward thinking. If you care about these kids, tough love is the only thing that's going to work. Tough love. All right. Coming up in our next segment, we wanted to bring Todd Myers in because there's some interesting stuff going on with the gas price debacle, but also I had to have him ask about this Biden. Biden's, you know, they're pushing EVs at the federal level, and they've set these EV goals. The problem is there's an increasing thought that, and there's increasing evidence that Americans just don't want them. They just don't want to buy the electric vehicle. So how can you set electric vehicle goals if Americans are saying that they don't want to buy electric vehicles? So we'll have that coming up next. First, I've been talking to our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. There's a lot happening right now in the real estate market. I mean, 2023 was just not a good year for real estate. And so looking at 2024, it's like, what's going to happen? Is the Fed going to drop interest rates? Who knows? I mean, Wes really does think that they will. But either way, it's important to make sure that if you're going to sell your home this year, that it is ready to hit the market when it's most advantageous. Here's Wes.
If they stay where they're at right now, I actually think that values will stay closer to where they're at. We'll see lower appreciation. We'll see appreciation, but it'll be modest. But if they start to come back down, well, that's when I think we'll start to see more of the multiple offer situations and the bid ups in home sale prices.
Yeah, Wes talking about what will happen if the Fed does or does not drop interest rates. But the very best thing you can do is, I mean, reach out to a few real estate agents. Lord knows there's enough of them, but are they good ones? I will tell you, Wes Jones has been doing this for a long time, and he and his team have some innovative marketing strategies and programs where you can make sure your home is in tip-top shape, ready to hit the market so you get the best possible price. Sellwithwes.com, start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think, and then reach out to Wes. He'll give you a free market analysis, and he'll talk to you about programs like the Listing Boost Concierge Service in case you need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home. They can come in, manage those projects, take everything off your plate. They can even help you pay for it up front. I think that's pretty great. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, we talked about a couple climate-related stories lately on, I think it was Monday's show, right? I think Monday's, or maybe last week. Was it last week? Oh my gosh, the time is flying. I don't know what's happening. So last week we talked about, you know, the climate auctions that are happening. So the Climate Commitment Act passes in Washington State. January 2023, the auctions for carbon credits began. And as soon as they began, boy, the prices were through the roof. And as a result, gas prices went up like 40 cents a gallon. So something interesting is happening right now with the latest climate auction. The credits went for like nothing. Half of what they were going for less than a year ago. And Todd Myers had tweeted out that he believes that's an indicator that the market, the people who have to buy these carbon credits, that they think voters are going to repeal the Climate Commitment Act in November. So basically, they got to pick up these, you know, these credits, but they don't want to pay a lot for them in case those credits are worthless starting next year. So I wanted Todd to come on to talk about that. But while we had him, the Biden administration has announced some new rules. This is from the New York Times, aimed at expanding electric vehicles. The New York Times says the regulation would require automakers to sell more electric vehicles and hybrids by gradually tightening limits on tailpipe pollution. The question is, are the goals they're setting unrealistic given the fact that Americans really haven't shown a lot of interest in buying EVs? Here's Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center. Todd Myers, welcome back to Undivided.
Always nice to join you.
Yeah, before we talk about what's going on with the carbon auctions in Washington, I wanted to bring up this Biden and EVs and kind of where the country is heading. So the EPA has finalized its rules for tailpipe emissions and trying to limit them. But it's interesting because at the same time, I almost feel like their ruling has like an acknowledgement that EVs aren't catching on as quick as they'd hoped.
Yeah, that's right. So they have to be very careful because there was a strong trend 2 years ago, even last year, of buying more electric vehicles. Hertz, famously, the rental car agency, put a lot of effort into EVs and then is now selling those EVs because people didn't even want to rent them, let alone buy them. So there's been kind of a step back from EVs. Well, of course, the EPA and here in Washington State, they don't want to acknowledge that. So they're pushing forward, although the EPA rule came out less strict than some people feared, but still pretty strict nonetheless.
So, I mean, I guess practically speaking, how is that working? If they've got this timeline to eliminate, you know, tailpipe emissions or to reduce them, but at the same time, people aren't interested, it seems, in buying the alternative. Where does that leave the country? What are they going to do if they get to that point where they're like, hey, we're supposed to be like, you know, and then everybody's like, well, we don't want your electric cars.
Well, we've been through this before, both with other states and the EPA. The EPA had a mandate more than a decade ago for people to buy biofuels and different particular types of biofuels, like one that's called cellulosic ethanol, which was supposed to be the next great thing. Well, the problem with it was is that it didn't work, right? It was very expensive. So the EPA just kept putting off the numbers and just kept postponing the targets. So, you know, as much as they put these targets in and say, you must meet these goals, and under the current goals by 2032, it's about 67% of new vehicles would need to be electric under the federal rules. So we've been through this before, and if they miss the targets, the EPA just says, well, sorry, we'll waive them for now because reality sets in.
Yeah, but if you've got like a certain percentage where it's got to be electric vehicles, this puts, I think, car manufacturers in a tough position because they want to make the cars that people want to buy. So I guess how do they navigate that if they've got these rules that they're under, but then people aren't buying their electric vehicles?
That's exactly right. And of course, the reason that they need to make these rules is because people won't buy them unless they're forced, right? I mean, that's the assumption behind the rules is that, right, you don't create a regulation to force people to buy or sell things that are popular. You only create those regulations when they're not. So that's what's going on here, and how that works out, we'll see. Washington already has these rules, and ours are actually more strict. Like I said, 2032, the Biden administration rules is 67% of new vehicles. By 2032, Washington has to be 82%. And just 3 years from now, in 2026, we have to be at 35% of new vehicles are either partial hybrid, which is plug-in hybrid, or full electric. The last 2 months, we've been at 11%. So we need to triple in just 2 years.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And Jay Inslee is no stranger to setting climate goals and then just skipping right past them like it never, ever happened. What do you think, Todd, it's going to take for more people to be interested in buying an electric vehicle?
Well, a variety of things. One is the price has to come down. The average sale price of an electric vehicle in 2023 in Washington State was $57,000. So you're talking a very nice Mercedes-Benz. People can't afford that. If you need to get to 35% or 82%, right, prices have to come down. Government can't do that. That's on the manufacturers. They need to find ways to do that. Like I said, we've been through this before. In the 1990s, California had a mandate requiring that a certain percentage of vehicles be electric, and they just waived those rules completely because the technology wasn't there. So I think that's the fundamental thing. The other thing is the range has to increase. Even people will say, well, but you can get a Nissan Leaf. That's not very expensive. That's true, but the range of a Nissan Leaf is very short. It's essentially a commuter car. I actually one time was doorbelling for a political candidate, and a guy had a Nissan Leaf and a Toyota Prius. And I said, it's interesting that you have both of those. Why do you have both of those? And he said, oh, well, because if I have to go anywhere a long distance, I take the Prius instead of the Leaf. So he actually had two cars that were doing the job of one car because he wanted an electric vehicle.
Wow. That's not feasible for a lot of families. So let's talk about the carbon auctions. We discussed earlier on the week, based on your reporting, the fact that in the latest carbon auction, the credits went for less. And you see that as an indicator that the market is sort of betting on or thinking that voters might repeal the Climate Commitment Act in November. Explain.
Yeah, so it's a little bit complicated. The way the system works is that for every metric ton of CO2, an industry or other organization that's covered, University of Washington has to buy carbon credits because they emit CO2. So they have to buy them at an auction. And so the price at that auction goes up and down based on supply and demand. But you don't turn those credits in. The credits that they're buying now aren't turned in until 2025. So if the CCA is repealed by Initiative 2117, then those credits are worth zero because you don't have to turn them in anymore. So let's say you're sitting here and you know that you have an obligation because the law covers you. But you're not sure whether that is going to be around next year. What do? You bid as low as you possibly can. And that's what we saw. The minimum price is $24. The final bid price was $25.72, I think it is, which is less than half of what it was in just December. So people clearly think that it might go away. They don't want to be caught short if the CCA doesn't get repealed, but at the same time, they don't want to risk any more money than is necessary. And there are two results of this. The first is that the impact at the pump is going to go down.
Great.
So the impact at the pump has been in the mid 30 cents per gallon. The total cost has been about 43 cents per gallon. Some of that is picked up by the refiner. Some of that is picked up by the gas stations themselves, but about 35 cents a gallon is passed on to the consumers. Well, you're going to see that go down. We've already started to see the gap between Washington and Oregon go down. And I think you're going to see that more over the next week. So that's good news. The second is that if the prices had just stayed what they were in December, Washington residents would be paying $137 million more dollars in taxes than they would have otherwise. So I think that's what's really interesting is that just having the initiative on the ballot has already saved taxpayers $137 million.
Oh, I love that. Although it scares me a little bit because I don't want this sort of false reduction in the impact of the Climate Commitment Act right before the election. You know, like I want voters, I hate to say it, but I want them to remember the full impact of the CCA at the gas pump so they remember how much is at stake, you know, financially for every family. So it's a sort of push and pull, like I'm glad we're saving money right now, but I don't want it to reduce the likelihood that the CCA is repealed.
Well, and that's exactly what the CCA supporters, and actually the guy who wrote the CCA, Reuben Carlisle, is like, oh, no, no, this is more what we expected. This is the actual cost. It's not that much. Well, still, 20 cents a gallon is not a small amount in the first place. But second, it's nonsense, and he knows it because demand for the credits fell by 40% just compared to the third quarter last year. That shows that a lot of people who would have otherwise bid and who were bidding last year are now like, I'm going to stay out of the market if I can. So yeah, they're playing that game of pretending that this is what normal is when clearly it's not.
Yeah, no. And that's why we've got the saying, right, for the initiatives, vote yes, pay less.
Yeah.
Vote yes, pay less. We're just trying to drill that into people's brains. So when they get their ballot in November, they're like, oh, I'm supposed to vote yes to pay less. So, all right, Todd Myers, thank you as always for helping us make sense of complex issues. We appreciate you.
Nice to talk with you.
Todd's the best. And yeah, that kind of worries me. It's like, oh, how convenient now gas prices are going to go down as a result of these market factors thinking, hey, this thing's going to be repealed. And then people will be lulled into a false sense of confidence. Don't fall for it. Vote yes, pay less. I did make the EV issue the subject of our daily subscriber show poll today because I was really curious, like, what would it take to get you guys to vote, or to get me, for I don't have an EV either, to buy an electric vehicle? Because people aren't, and at a slower and slower rate. Meanwhile, the federal government's like, let's make it like more likely for people to go in and buy an electric vehicle. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, which improvement to electric vehicles would make you most likely to purchase one? I realize some of you would say none of the above, but would it be a lower purchase price, a longer range per charge, or better performance, including in cold weather? Because I know that has been a concern of some folks with the EVs not working when the old power goes out. You have no way to charge it. Let's see. Nancy says, I've got a Tesla Y that I've had for 2 years, zero problems, and I charge it at home. I've never had a problem finding superchargers. I love the car, but you need to pay attention to what it tells you. Oh, and I also own two classic cars if I feel really nostalgic about not buying gas. Yeah. Let's see. Michelle says, we will not be purchasing all electric. We enjoy our CRV hybrid. Yeah, hybrid's interesting as well, because then you've got the two options and sort of the backup. Krissa says, I have no desire to have an EV at this point. More information continues to come out about how destructive the batteries are on the environment and how harmful the battery plants are to surrounding communities. David says, I would prefer a hybrid over an EV, but I'm hanging on to my gas cars. Thank you very much. Let me see here. Karen also talked about the negative environmental and human impact of producing and disposing the batteries. It says it makes her a never EV-er. But what if you don't have a choice, Karen? What if they're like, no more gas cars down the road? I mean, I think I'll be dead by then. I think most of us, by the time they actually get rid of gas cars, probably won't be on this beautiful planet anymore, but our children and grandchildren, whatever it'll be. But most people in the answer to the poll are saying a longer range per charge, if any of those options would make them most likely to purchase one. I think that's it for me too, is that like, I go, if I'm going to, I mean, Mike and I like to go to Eastern Washington. So it's like, if we go over there, one, are we going to be able to get there? And are we going to be able to find a charger if we don't get there? So that kind of stuff kind of freaks me out. So, all right. I'm going to be so annoyed at this next story. I'm just, can you tell, dripping with annoyance. So King 5 News did a expose suggests it was negative. Did a profile on Bob Ferguson, the Attorney General of Washington, who very well could be the next governor of Washington State. The headline, brace yourself, Bob Ferguson unveils public safety policies that he'll implement if elected as governor. I don't want to hear the public safety policies that Bob Ferguson's going to implement. And I almost think it's like giving him just the headline. That's what he wants people to believe, that he's going to be a law and order public safety governor. Because that's what is, you know, public safety is popular with people. And he has been anti-public safety in his time as attorney general. So what do candidates do, especially if they're running for governor in the lead up to an election? They try to moderate their views. They try to act more reasonable. And then they get elected and they just throw it all out the window. So I was slightly annoyed. I mean, I'm going to play some clips from it. And I like Drew Mickelson with King 5. I think he does a good job. And when I saw the headline, I'm like, okay, I bet Drew pushed back a little bit on some of the anti-public safety sentiments of Bob Ferguson. And with Bob, what I'll say before I play the clips is, with Bob, it's more like what he didn't say than what he did say. I think there are some examples with Bob where it's like, had he spoken out against some of the madness as a very popular figure among Democrats in Washington, I think it could have gone a long way. I've said that about the governor, because with the governor, it was also a little bit like what he didn't say. You know, with police defunding, silent, boop. When CHOP happened in Seattle, he's like, I haven't heard about that. When it's like, he did obviously hear about it. When he had taken those opportunities, because he came out 2 years later, the governor did and said, police defunding, I'm not in favor of police defunding. Dude, where were you 2 years ago when it really mattered? It's like they shut up when it's not politically palatable to their base. And then they come out years later like, oh, I never supported that. Okay, that doesn't do us any good now. And with Bob Ferguson, it was like that on retail theft. So he comes out, I think it was 2 years ago now, and says, oh, we're starting a retail theft task force. It's like, dude, you didn't say a word when businesses were being looted to the studs in downtown Seattle and in Bellevue during the summer of 2020 and in 2021 as all that craziness continued. It's like, no, that's not, I'm not going to say anything about that. And then he's going to come out and act like a champion for retailers? Give me a freaking break. The Attorney General's office, they could have been, because a lot of this is organized retail theft, right? That would have been absolutely in their purview to go after organized retail theft. He didn't do it. But then he's like, I'm about to launch my campaign for governor. So what do people want to hear? Oh, they want to hear on public safety. Let me just act like it. So anyway, let's go through a couple of these clips from King 5 on what Bob Ferguson's public safety plan is if he's to be the governor. So let's start with police officers. Big issue in Washington State. We have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the country. Here's part of this King 5 story.
Individuals have a right to feel safe in their communities, with their kids, with their loved ones, as they go about their daily lives. And that is a message I've heard, not surprisingly, over and over and over again.
The state of Washington has the fewest law enforcement officers per capita in the entire U.S. Bob Ferguson says that is unacceptable. It would change if he's elected. As governor, Ferguson says he would hire and train more state troopers and provide grant funding for cities and counties to boost their ranks. Ferguson wants to hire cold case detectives to look into cases understaffed agencies have had to set aside, while also expanding drug treatment to help those battling addiction.
Nothing is more maddening for parents I've spoken to when they say, Bob, I've got a child who's suffering from addiction. It took years before they were ready to get treatment. Once they were, they told me it's 8 weeks before I get him or her in the door. Look, I cannot imagine as a parent having that experience.
Bob Ferguson supports decriminalizing hard drugs. That's all you need to know. Bob Ferguson supports decriminalizing hard drugs. When that debate was happening in Olympia after the Blake decision nullified our state's felony drug possession statute, Bob Ferguson went on KUOW and he said he supports decriminalizing hard drugs in the middle of a drug overdose crisis. So he wants to sit here and tell King 5 these sad stories about parents that come to him, about kids who've overdosed. I haven't met one parent, and I've interviewed many, who have a child who's either an active addiction, like living on the streets, or who died from a fentanyl overdose. or heroin overdose previously. I haven't met one parent who supported the idea of decriminalization for drugs or a hands-off criminal justice approach, because they really thought that had my kid been arrested, they might be alive today. So I'm sorry. First of all, the fact that he supports drug decriminalization is, that's the non-starter. That makes him wholly unqualified to be the governor of Washington State. Not even Inslee. Not even Inslee was in favor of drug decriminalization. So nothing that Bob Ferguson says on the campaign trail about what he would do to deal with the drug crisis that we're in, nothing matters as long as he supports the decriminalization of hard drugs. Let's start there. All right, so he then went into, in this King 5 story, on kind of enforcing the laws and some of these crimes that are happening. He talks about smash and grabs, and he also talks about sex offenders on McNeil Island.
Did you and your party help us get to where we are? You have been in a position where we could have gone after maybe some of these crimes a little earlier. What do you say to those critics?
Well, let's be clear. Virtually everybody who is a sexually violent predator at McNeil Island was put there by me and my team. Local law enforcement officials across the state, whether they're Republican prosecutors or Democrats, turn to my office to take on some of the most serious felonies we have across our state. They know they can trust my team to prosecute those folks to the fullest extent of the law. So we are using the powers we have as Attorney General to assist local law enforcement solve cold cases, go after bad actors. Role as governor, what folks can expect is to take that same approach, that same mentality, which is going after the bad actors and holding them accountable. That's been my priority as Attorney General, and that's going to continue as a governor.
Going after the bad actors, like you went after Value Village and then ended up like losing, and we had to pay millions of dollars to Value Village because you wanted a political prosecution under your belt. And the whole McNeil Island thing, gosh, this is annoying, because that's his office's job. The civil commitments to McNeil Island are not something that Bob Ferguson and his office came up with or pursue on their own accord. The civil commitments after a sex offender is deemed, you know, irredeemable and it's like they finished their prison term, we want to put them on an island, that job is assigned to the Attorney General's office to take those cases and then argue them in court. They're just doing their job that is assigned, again, assigned to them. So he wants to use that as, we've done this, as if it was like their idea and they're proactive about it. No, those come to the office and it's like, we have to represent the state in making the case for civil commitment. So give me a break. I want to end with Drew Mickelson at the end of his report had something to say about police pursuits I just thought was noteworthy.
Now, some of those same critics say that the police restrictions on those police pursuits are what have caused this increase in crime in the state. And just this month, legislators voted to roll back those restrictions. Bob Ferguson says that is a good idea, and he noted he was not a supporter of those original restrictions when they were passed here back in 2021.
He never said so. Nicole, will you email Bob Ferguson's office or his campaign and ask them specifically, provide us with any sort of link or press release or anything from Bob Ferguson that said he was not in favor of the rollbacks on police pursuits when it was being considered in 2021. Anything.
Okay.
Anything up to, in fact, even in the last whatever, anything up to the point that initiative passed, that he has said he was in favor of fixing that. Because it doesn't exist. If it does exist, which I tend to not believe it does, because we were all over the police pursuit issue, you don't think that I would have seen if Bob Ferguson came out against Democrats who rolled back police pursuits? No, I'm pretty confident. If it doesn't, I'll apologize to him. But I firmly believe that he has not said jack until now it's popular, right? Oh, well, the initiative, the initiative passed and Democrats voted for it. And now police pursuits have been, they're allowed more. And now it's like there's no political risk for him in saying, the police pursuits? I was never in favor of rolling back police pursuits. Coward, this guy, I can't. There's so much at stake in this. I give credit to Drew to pushing back and saying, some would say that your party, is to blame for the public safety crisis because you've been in charge. I would challenge Drew, though, to say that as more of a fact, because Democrats have been the only ones in charge for 8 legislative sessions and in the governor's office for 40 years. So you can't actually blame it on another party. So, I would have encouraged that to be said as more of a statement to Bob Ferguson, like your party has been in power for all this time, that public safety has been on the decline. So why should voters continue to choose a party that has pushed policies that have led to worse public safety. You don't have to throw it out there as like some people say. No, that's just a fact, right? And also I would say on the, Bob Ferguson mentioned in this story about the lowest number of police officers per capita and how he wants to hire more police officers. How much money did he say he was going to put toward that? Hold on, I have this here. I want to pull it up. Because I just want to say and make a point about Bob Ferguson. Okay, I can't find it. But he said he wanted to, oh no, I have it here. Sorry, guys. It's not Nicole.
Million,
it's me. It's my fault. Yeah. $100 million mm-hmm. for grants and city agencies to increase staffing. He wants to hire more state patrolmen. This guy is the one who's out there politically prosecuting the police. Bob, no one wants to work for you. You think that if you're the governor, we're going to be able to increase police staffing in this state? Officers are going to quit if you're the governor. State patrolmen are going to quit if you're the governor. We'll be in a crisis with police staffing. Why would you want to work for a man who is 0-for-4 in political prosecutions against the police, who didn't stick up for the police, who didn't say anything, didn't say jack during police defunding. Now you want to turn around and be given the most powerful position in the state of Washington and be in charge of the Washington State Patrol? You can throw 100 million, you can throw 100 billion, 100 trillion at the problem. I promise you, Bob Ferguson, and I promise you voters, we will not be able to increase our police staffing under a Bob Ferguson governorship. In fact, it will be quite the opposite. So no matter how much he wants to rewrite history and use the media to push this narrative that he's going to all of a sudden be a pro-public safety governor, it's complete bullshit. And it is very important that we don't allow him to pretend that he's something he's not. Wild stuff. All right, what was I just going to talk about? Okay, we're going to go to national news coming up next. I just lose it when it comes to Bob. I'm like, oh no, I have a story on immigration I want to talk about and what's happening with our landlord renting crisis, because this is, again, foreshadowing where we're going to head to. First, I've been encouraging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Did you say Dave Taylor called you?
He did. Well, he texted me.
Dave Taylor with First Mark Insurance heard, of course, that I got a speeding ticket. And so he called Nicole, and I'm sure he was disappointed
in me. He had some advice.
But yes, he was giving advice. I mean, I'm not saying Dave Taylor is going to personally call everybody, but he does care. And I was glad to have First Mark Insurance when I got the speeding ticket. So I'm going to talk to them and be like, what should I do? Should I defer it? What's the best thing? I don't want my rates to go up. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge a year ago. We're so glad we did. We're now members of the First Mark family, and we are now experiencing the service they offer at that 1 year mark, because we just, you know, at that 1 year period, we got into all these new policies under First Mark Insurance, and the follow-up is awesome. They email us like, hey, FYI, you got some payments that are going to be coming out. Do you want to change your insurance? Has anything changed with you? It is such a no-brainer. I love it. And we never pay First Mark anything. Here's Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously, I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum, they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now, because it's complicated.
Yeah, it is complicated. And I don't want to be, if something changes in our life, or if God forbid I got the speeding ticket, I had one of those big box insurance companies and I was dealing with them myself, sitting on a phone tree being like, do you have any advice for me? They'd be like, yeah, drive slower. Or they'd drop me from my plan. Just be terrible. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Schedule some time to take the First Mark Challenge. It's totally free. It just takes you like an hour of your life and it's going to save you so much time and possibly money on the back end. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. I'm getting a lot of compliments on the live feed right now for not swearing. Did you hear that? Bullshoot.
I did. Well done.
Thank you. Okay.
You'll take a compliment for anything.
Literally, is my self-esteem so low that I just need compliments? I feed off them. Nicole gets so sick of me because I'm like, you know, if you can't compliment yourself, who can you compliment? I'm not getting enough compliments. I'm just going to give it to myself. Fair. I was telling Nicole, I've never had a better hair month.
I know.
I've never had
a... You took my advice a year ago?
So Nicole told me like a year ago to get one of those. I feel like we are doing commercials for the Dyson Airwrap or whatever. She told me to get one and I tried hers and I was having a hard time using it. And I finally got one, the shark one. And men are like, what are you freaking talking about? It's like a little suction thing that sucks up your hair into a curl and it gives you these voluminous, beautiful... Anyway, it's changed my life. Okay, it's changed my life. Good hair day every day. the little things, you know, it's the little things. All right. So getting serious, we've talked about what's happening with the insanity around bad tenants and squatters and how policies have pushed this situation to a point where it's going to be vigilante justice. And I don't think any of us want to get there. Well, there is a video making the rounds on social media that shows all of us where this crisis is heading if we do not do something now. Let's talk about it in our segment on Freaking Believable. So let's talk about the trajectory here, because this is where we're foreshadowing the trajectory of what tenant protections that are too strict are going to do. So we've had the situation, you know, during COVID, where it was like, even if you didn't lose your job over COVID, you still didn't have to pay rent. And there was no protections for landlords, no real help for landlords. So it was like, screw the rich landlords, which is a total fallacy. And we're just going to help protect tenants. And then you move that into, you know, Seattle and Tacoma, and they're adopting stricter tenant protections, you know, capping late fees and all of these things, and making it really difficult and tedious for landlords to get a bad tenant out of their units. And then you have these taxpayer dollars that are going to attorneys for tenants. So our tax money, your tax money, the tax money of landlords is funding free attorneys for tenants, no matter how bad of a tenant they were, no matter if they just stopped paying rent because they didn't feel like it, didn't lose a job or anything. It's like, you get a free attorney to try to fight it. And those free attorneys are causing the eviction process to be delayed by months or even years. So we talked about the story of Jason Roth, the homeless Seattle landlord who built a house, or who bought a house, fixed it up, rented it out to a guy who just never paid rent, was there for a year. It took a year to get the guy evicted. Meanwhile, the guy's like showing on his Instagram, spending every day at the gym, going on vacations, going on yachts. When he finally moved out of the house, there were Prada boxes, like a guy who could pay rent, but the system protected the tenant and not the landlord. And then you look at what's happening right now in the city of Bellevue, where you've got an immigrant, a legal immigrant, who bought a home, is renting it out to a guy who hasn't paid rent in 2 years. And the system is so delayed that now every Saturday, citizens are out there protesting this deadbeat tenant who won't pay rent and who is just using every tool to his advantage to be able to delay things. So that's going on. Yesterday, we foreshadowed things a little further. Over in New York, in Queens, there's a woman who got arrested when she tried to change the locks and take back a home that not even a former tenant was in, that just a squatter was in. A guy who had no legal right to be there, couldn't provide legal proof, but police arrested her for an unlawful eviction because she would have still had to go to court to fight to get a squatter out of her house. And I said, this is the direction that things are heading. This is insane. Well, it gets even crazier. So there's a video going around on social media that, if you believe people on social media, is an illegal immigrant, right? Who is telling people the way to basically squat in a vacant home and use some of these protections to your advantage to be able to live in that home for free. So he's basically giving a playbook for, hey, I've looked into these codes and these policies, and if we can seize an abandoned house, we can just live in it, even if someone else owns it. If it falls into disrepair, we go there and we fix it up and it's been abandoned, how can we use these codes? That's the future. That's what's going to happen. He was saying that an African migrant he talked to had already seized, they'd already seized 7 houses.
Well, he knows of that many houses have already been seized. And that's then at crazy. The end there, what he was saying was that they can fix them up and then they're theirs.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think back. I've heard of something along those lines, but I think there's more to it.
Well, I think
but
that's also, similar to the New York case.
Yeah.
He's saying, I did work on the house. That's fine.
It's insane. And just the act of squatting, though, they still have protection. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to legally try to get a squatter out of the house. So now you have illegal immigrants who are going to be coming in, and we already know that there is more than the country can house or handle at this moment. So what? They're just going to go find, and they've got the playbook, and they're going to go find abandoned houses and just live in them. And we've set up all these rules to make that possible, to make that not only possible, but to make that feasible. So is that the situation that we want to get to? already talked about bad tenants, the protections that they're given, a squatter in New York can't even get them out. And now you've got people whose goal from the beginning explicitly is to steal your property, is to make your property theirs. And they've got a playbook to try to make it happen. We have to fix this. We have to fix this. You should not be able to, or you should not have to take legal measures to remove someone from your house who's there unlawfully. That should be instant, call 911, the police come, and they're removed from the home. And they're trespassed from the home under threat of prosecution if they come back. That it should be that simple. There should be no reason, even if you have someone who's in violation of a lease, reasonable, obviously, you're not going to kick someone out on the street who's like behind a month on rent or something, but we should have reasonable protections in place for landlords to say, hey, this is my property, this is how I make a living, this person is not paying rent, they have no good excuse, and you can get them removed. There's no reason this should take a year or 2 years. It's insane. It's unbelievable, and this is the direction that we're heading in. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State, we'll get to our segment, Florida Report, in case you need a little taste of what it's like to live in a sane place in America. And yes, Miranda's back today.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, you feeling better?
I am feeling better.
I mean, I'm a good boss for giving you the week off last week.
Yeah, you are pretty nice. I did have the COVID.
Yeah. Apparently that's still a thing. I feel bad for you because you're such a normal person, but you're definitely going to have to wear masks on planes. You know that, right?
I know. And I already did when I tested my travel skills in December. I wore a mask and I was just like, I got to get over that, you know, because at the end of the day, some people really do have a necessary reason, me, to wear a mask while traveling and being exposed to the world. So,
yeah, we need to get you a mask that says, leave me alone. I'm a libertarian. I just have bad asthma.
Yeah, something like that. So people don't look at me funny because like, I just feel so weird wearing one. But it is, it's like I have to wear one more now than I did when it was like actual quarantine time. Yeah. So.
All right. We're glad you're better. Okay. We were just joking beforehand. Florida could not be any more different than Washington. I mean, that's why we do this segment, right? Is we just like a glimpse at what sanity looks like all the way across the country. So Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has now banned Florida's homeless population from sleeping in parks.
Yeah. Not just parks, but also sidewalks, basically any public spaces. They are going to require, you know, the like different counties throughout the state to provide a temporary campsite area for homeless people if the shelters happen to get, they have reached their max capacities. They've set aside about $30 million throughout the state to try to like help counties deal with, you know, because they're going to have to manage these campsites accordingly. They're going to have to provide resources for, you know, drug abuse and mental health resources in addition to security, because these campsites are not going to be like a free drug use place for people to go either. Yeah. So they kind of just plan to have these campsites as like a middle ground between people either finding a bed in a shelter or getting back on their feet. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people are very skeptical of it. I mean, it's homeless is like a huge issue. It's very multifaceted and just getting them off the street isn't a solution to homelessness, but I do think it's kind of nice to see him put some effort into making the streets enjoyable for like people that aren't homeless. Cause it isn't, it does get a little annoying to like have to walk around people camping and sleeping on the streets and constantly asking for money. I do think that it's nice to like not be overlooked as like a citizen.
Yeah,
on
well,
both ends.
Florida cares about quality of life. They do. And I'm sorry. It's like you have a right as a citizen to be like, hey, man, I'm sick of walking past all the homeless people and having them beg for money or they're on drugs or whatever. I will say homeless, the homelessness issue in Florida pales in comparison to what we're dealing with in Washington State and on the West Coast. I've said that when I visited Miami, I'm like, was shocked by how few homeless people there are in such a beautiful paradise. But I always find it interesting, the opposition to stuff like this, because people are saying, well, this won't do anything to solve the crisis. Yeah, but leaving them where they are doesn't do anything to solve the crisis either. So at least, yeah. You know, if you're going up, and this is, by the way, very similar to what we do here. There are some cities that have basically said you can't, no sit, no lie. So you can't camp if there's shelter available to you, is the Ninth Circuit ruling that we follow here. And what that does is it gives police the ability to, and outreach workers to say, hey, we've got services, we've got shelter, do you want it? Do you want it? And if you don't, no, I'm sorry, you can't camp in the park next to the playground. Like, you can't do that. So yeah. this makes sense, and I'm glad it's happening there as well. Okay, so we know there's a lot of violence and unrest happening in Haiti right now between feuding gangs. So DeSantis has taken it upon himself, and the state of Florida has taken it upon itself to try to evacuate Americans.
Yeah, this is similar to what he did with Israel when he sent a few state-sanctioned flights out to bring some Floridians home safely during everything that was going on over there. But this is proving to be a little bit more difficult to organize these flights, as a lot of the airports have been shut down by these politically affiliated gangs. But the first of these flights landed last night in Orlando, brought home about 14 Floridians, U.S. citizens, including children. They have also set up like an online portal. So, you know, Florida residents who are U.S. citizens that are in Haiti right now and need help getting off the island safely can put in that request. And Florida is working with the U.S. government to verify identities, make sure that these people are who they say they are, and getting them home safely.
Yeah, and he did the same thing in Israel to get Americans home. DeSantis did in Florida. Floridians, I wouldn't imagine there's really any pushback to using the resources of the state of Florida to go in and get these people out.
No, I mean, people, of course, are questioning where this money is coming from. It comes from where all the money that the government does anything with, the taxpayers. But at the end of the day, I think that that's probably one of the best uses of taxpayer money, is to bring U.S. citizens home safely when they're in danger. Yeah. I don't think anybody should be complaining about that use of tax money.
I will say that DeSantis did say of these flights that he would not allow undocumented Haitian migrants to come in on the flight. So this is strictly American citizens. I know the first one had some children on it. So this isn't like, hey, let's get Haitians off the island who aren't American citizens.
No, and on that spectrum, like when he talks about the possibility of Haitians coming ashore, like non-American citizens, he's put out extra Coast Guard resources just to make sure that we don't start getting a bunch of Haitian immigrants landing on shores here. And even kind of like, you know, I don't, for lack of a better term, joked about sending them if they come to Martha's Vineyard. Like they.
I don't think that's a joke. If DeSantis said it, he's probably going to do it.
He's probably pretty serious about it. But they are putting out resources to stop, you know, Haitian immigrants from, you know, landing on our shores, just like we get a lot of Cubans and other islanders.
Yeah. And hey, if they want to come in legally and seek asylum, I would argue what's happening in Haiti is probably a good reason for an asylum claim. That's why we have that process. They can absolutely do that. But coming in and just pouring into the country, DeSantis is saying no, and I agree with him. All right, Miranda, enjoy sanity down there while we sulk in the sorrow of progressivism.
Sanity and sunshine.
I know. I'm going to be down there in like a month, and I just cannot wait. All right, we'll see you next week. Glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right. Somebody said in the comments we should put Miranda in a bubble. She's like this close to needing a bubble. The environmental factors are... Did I ever tell you the story? So when she was hospitalized, right? Mm-hmm. If you're new to the show, my sister has really severe asthma, and she spent like 8 days on an intubator in the fall because she also had RSV, and then she ended up having a really bad situation.
After returning from Washington.
Yeah. So anyway, but I was like, okay, what do I need to do in her apartment to improve the air quality? And so I got this big, you know, one of these industrial like air purifiers, mm-hmm. and it has this lighting system on it where it's like green is good, red is like your air is terrible. So I put it in her house all day, and it went from like the middle up to green. So I was like, good. And then I decided to open the slider, and she lives in Miami, right? And I leave for like 5 minutes, and I come back, it's red. So I was like, oh my God, the air outside is worse than the air inside. You can't go anywhere. So maybe she does need a bubble.
I'm so curious what did it. Like what in the air is doing
that? I don't know, probably just allergens or environmental factors. Ugh. I don't know, it's the humidity or something, maybe. But it was really, really bad. Mm-hmm. Okay, we talked on the show earlier this week about what's happening with Planet Fitness. So if you're not familiar, up in Alaska, this lady was mad because there's a dude in the woman's locker room. And I'll say, like, not even someone who like presents as a female. It just was like a dude in I don't know if they consider themselves transgender or what it was, but he was shaving and she was upset by it. And Planet Fitness is like, hey, it's our policy that they can be in there. And she ends up taking a picture of this guy and posting it and she loses her membership. So now Planet Fitness stock is like, ooh, that was the bad. What is the noise?
Is that deflating? Or?
It's not doing well. So I wanted to ask Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, you know, is this stuff, does it worry you as a money manager when you see a company just tanking for some sort of like viral reason? So we talked about that today. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Yeah, we're talking about the intersection between culture wars and the stock market. So more and more, we saw this with Bud Light, right? The whole Bud Light, Dylan Mulvaney thing, and all of a sudden, like, Bud Light's tanking. And we just saw it this week with Planet Fitness. There was a Planet Fitness in Alaska that ended a woman's membership because she took a picture of a man in the woman's bathroom and complained about it. So from your perspective, when you see, you know, stuff like that, and like, there's a stock tanking because of a news story, how much weight do you give that?
In the past, that has been somewhat of a dinner bell for us, meaning as a value guy, I love to see when companies get rocked for trivial, transitory type reasons, because they don't usually last very long. And if it's a really solid company underneath, it's a great opportunity to buy it. A Planet Fitness is a lot different on a lot of levels because for whatever reason, Planet Fitness was one of those stocks that got kind of caught up in these memes, right? And went ridiculously high. So when it's a company like that, I will usually have my analysts, one of them, take a look at it just to make sure we're not missing something. But if I see a news story, I'll put it this way. I haven't looked into Planet Fitness, right? And the reason why is I knew they were coming from such an overvalued position. And second of all, if you're going to cut a woman's membership in Alaska for that, you're probably going to be closing some locations in Alaska pretty soon.
Yeah.
Right. When you get bad fundamentals combined with woke thinking on management's part, I'm out.
Yeah.
Right. Go woke, go broke. I would not be surprised if this becomes a real issue for them.
Well, as you mentioned, you're doing it in Alaska. And I mean, you're talking about a base of customers that spans the political spectrum.
They don't really span the political spectrum. I guarantee you, if you pull fitness centers, they're more conservative. Guaranteed.
Are you saying that conservatives are more fit, Zach? What are you trying to say?
What I am saying is I think that the average conservative has their feet more firmly on the ground and probably recognizes their own weaknesses and their own need to improve themselves a little bit more than the average liberal does.
You don't think big is beautiful?
No, not at all. Not at all. If you can eat chips and sit on a couch, right, and that's how you got into a magazine, I'm not interested at all. Right? If I want to see that, I just go to the Puyallup Fair.
First of all, we love our viewers from Puyallup. Puyallup, we love you.
I love the Puyallup Fair. I love Puyallup. I love the fair.
That
I'm just saying.
Unexpected, but hilarious.
But I, you know what I mean, though? Like, I, yeah.
You know,
I don't
want to
be.
Can I get an email to forward all the complaints we get? Can we just send that right over to you personally?
I hope this is one of those where they read through what I meant, right? As opposed to. No, I just say, like, you can fill it with any fair. I remember the last time I was at Puyallup Fair, I saw a lady in like an electronic like wheelchair deal, mm-hmm. right? With an oxygen mask, mm-hmm. with oxygen in her nose, a tank on the back, a cheeseburger in her lap, smoking a cigarette.
That'll do it. That'll do it. Yeah. Hey, I'm on board with you. That's not healthy. Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll see you next week and you can find something nice to say about Puyallup.
All right, ladies. Okay. Thank you so much.
Zach, you're a sponsor. You can't alienate people in Puyallup. I mean, I get it, right? I get it. I do. That was funny. Zach's funny. So Jason says, Zach ain't going broke with that comment. God bless America. It's a lot of, yeah, Zach cracks me up. So if you want a really funny but a smart guy as your money manager, go with Zach Abraham. They're having another one of their risk management seminars coming up on Thursday, March 28th, 3:30 p.m. It's online, so you can register virtually. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. You've got all this stuff going on. Election looming, global unrest, rising cost of living, crazy market volatility. And so what this live webinar will do is help you understand your risk and whether your risk is well managed. There's no obligation or anything. It really is just a good opportunity to learn about what it means to manage your risk and to learn about what Bulwark Capital does in that regard. So again, the free 2024 Outlook live webinar is Thursday, March 28th. I want some people from Puyallup to sign up. You can register now, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance does not guarantee future results. All right, let's get to questions and comments.
I mean, it's just the biggest fair, so it gets the harshest,
the best, yeah.
You know, and, comments. You know,
but really, I go to the fair.
It's a fair thing, you know.
And so I don't agree that whole body types are beautiful. However, you don't have to be stick thin to be pretty.
Yes, I think he was being very specific clear, on...
Like people who can't walk or breathe but are eating hamburgers. Right, yes.
Yeah.
On lawlessness. Okay. Reset. Spencer Cole says, you were speeding on the open freeway on I-90 in rural eastern Washington. This kid was hauling in a residential area. Thank you for trying to make me feel better. I still shouldn't laugh about speeding. Lolly Wilson says, when I was a kid, we went to the police station in Wallingford and got to see a holding cell. Well, that's good. Lock a kid in there just for an hour or two.
I think that's a great idea, actually. Yeah, I think that should be... Let's see a bill for that next year.
Yeah.
All kids have to visit jail.
Visit jail.
Know what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
It's not like the movies. Well, maybe some movies.
Kind of like the movies, yeah.
Yeah.
on EVs, Kim Jacobson says, as far as EVs, never hear environment, slave labor, and mining the lithium, as well as increasing our dependency on China. Maybe let's go back to the horse and buggy. Please no. I would drive an EV before I went back to horse and buggy, I will say.
Hey, I like horse. That'd be fun.
So, yeah. Karenza Lindholm says, reading up on electric vehicles, the cost to repair is quite a bit more and takes longer to find places that can do the repairs. Not sure about insurance, but you have hidden costs that aren't talked about as much. True. And also, they're going to move from the gas tax to a pay-by-mile system. That's happening. And it's because they're like, you got to get into electric vehicles. You save on gas. But not really, because we're now going to tax you per mile that you drive.
I don't know which one they want more, right? Because pay by mile or EVs, because they're going to make the most money off of pay by mile. So they really want that.
For sure. All right, let me see here. On Ferguson, Matthew Cook says, except Bob doesn't want communities alerted when those sex offenders are released. Yeah, and that's been another thing we've been dealing with the sex offender thing, is like they struck down a bill that would have just improved community notification if a sex predator is getting off McNeil Island and they're going to be placed in your community. What's so controversial about community notification? And if Bob Ferguson wanted that, he would have fought for it.
Right.
And he didn't. So his silence speaks volumes. Todd Welch makes a good point. So is Bob saying that Jay has done a bad job at these things? Ask him that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, so all this stuff, he's been the governor for 12 years. Do you think his policies have been bad?
I hope somebody does ask him that.
Interesting, yes. Let me see here. Ferguson, Y says, Ferguson disgusts me. Strong words there. I seriously wonder how these politicians can completely contradict their own words and actions without any guilt. How can he sit there with a straight face saying he supports police officers and he will hold criminals accountable when he has done nothing but? And that's where it's the media's
really
job. It's the media's job, though. And I, like I said, I think Drew Mickelson is a good reporter, but I think there's this full sense of balance that some reporters wrongly believe they have to have. It's not fair and balanced to just ignore some of the things that Bob Ferguson has done or stood for or not said. It's your job to do a point for point. Like, hey, you focused on retail theft. Why didn't you say anything in 2020 when retail theft was a huge issue? Or with the drug crisis, okay, you support doing these things. Why then do you support decriminalizing drugs? You don't have to, you can do a point for point, and you have to do a point for point. So that's sort of one of my frustrations with how we cover political races, is you feel like you can't be aggressive. You got to be aggressive. This guy wants the most powerful job in the state of Washington. And I would expect that same level of aggressiveness with Dave Reichert or Semi Byrd. These people want a difficult, challenging job. Like, if they can't handle a hard interview, I promise they cannot handle the job of governor.
Right. And, you know, he said at the end that Ferguson says that he didn't support the Chase laws, mm-hmm. but did he look that up and make sure? Or did he find that somewhere? And do we have
any proof
of that?
You're going to email them, right? Like, yep. I am pretty confident that he did not say anything.
Not loudly.
So, no, not. I mean, he's going to say, oh, he had conversations behind the scenes with people. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Mm-hmm. Prove it. Mm-hmm. Okay, good comments per the usual. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Public safety for me, but not for thee. That is the message of King County Executive Dow Constantine. This is a really funny story, but it's kind of interesting and random. So Berrien News, and of course, Berrien is having all these issues with homelessness. And King County Executive Dow Constantine and his political appointee, Sheriff, they have decided not to enforce the ordinance that Berrien passed that says you can't camp in these public spaces. And we don't want that because it's leading to a lower quality of life, and they can't get it enforced because King County won't enforce it. Meanwhile, this is the headline in Berrien News. I love Berrien News. They're great. A tale of two Safeways, Dow's and ours. And in this article, they look at the quality of the Safeway that Dow Constantine goes to and the quality of the Safeway in Berrien. It says, not all Safeways are the same. There is a Safeway in Dow Constantine's North Admiral District, and there is a Safeway at Berrien Plaza. Constantine's Safeway is clean, bright, safe, and welcoming. Berrien's is dirty and crowded with drug addicts and mentally unstable persons both inside and outside. Constantine's Safeway has a full complement of staff. Berrien's is constantly short. The stores of the elites are safe. The elites will not tolerate the crime in their neighborhoods. The cities and stores of the regular folk, like those who need to shop at Berrien Safeway, become hives of crime. Quote, there are just so many drug addicts and crazy people in that Berrien Safeway. They load up shopping carts and just walk out the door. They scream in the store and just make a complete mess. I would never shop there, said an employee of Safeway, who went on to describe how they enjoy working at the Admiral District store in Dow Constantine's neighborhood. If you think for 1 second that the grocery store in Dow Constantine's neighborhood could look like the grocery store in Berrien and that something immediately wouldn't be done to address it, you're absolutely fooling yourselves, because it's public safety for them and not for the rest of us. That has been your sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. Coming up on Sundays with Subscribers, we are going to have on Senator Nikki Torres. She is the Latina state senator who has been redistricted out of her district in the name of equity and in the name of helping make things more fair for Hispanic voters. Doesn't make sense, does it? So we're going to hear her take on it coming up on Sunday. If you're not a subscriber already, please become one. Not only do you get access to that exclusive Sunday show and get to participate in our daily show polls, but also you are supporting our mission and our movement in the state of Washington to give common sense a comeback and reach more people with this message. So sign up, just $5 a month, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. So we'll see subscribers on Sunday. We'll see the rest of you on the live show Monday at noon.